Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's Platinum Roundtable, where we're going to be covering a brand new coaching module called the USP Creator. And I've got Dan Ginnity on the line, who's going to be, I'm going to be calling on him to give some feedback and do a little brainstorming. Dan, thanks for coming on the call today.
Glad as always to be here. Thanks, Jim.
So Dan and Steve D'Angelo are regulars on the roundtable. Steve is going to kind of be in and out of communication for the first part, but hopefully he'll be able to come on and join us as we get into the call here. So let's just dive right in. I first learned about unique selling propositions close to 15 years ago, and it was through my association and being involved with the coaching of Joe Polish and subsequently Dan Kennedy, where I learned how incredibly important USPs are and what they can do to transform your business. And what I'm going to do today is go through the USP Creator Manual that you all should have a copy of, emailed it out to the whole club ahead of time. And this manual, in fact, this whole concept of the USP Creator, I've put together actually for multiple industries. I've actually got some of you have been on the coaching calls I've done with Steve Rosenbaum, and we've done a couple of very good calls with him, and we're actually doing a product launch next week. Where we're going to be working with consultants, and this USP Creator is part of what we're going to be offering them to help them be able to better help their clients. So as we go through this, you're going to see examples from various industries, and that's helpful because if you don't borrow from outside your industry, you're doomed to copy those within it, and it's really some of the biggest breakthroughs in business come from borrowing from, you know, outside of your industry. The drive-through is a great example. I think it was first invented by restaurants, and then the banks got on board with it. You know, and then eventually pharmacies actually the drive-through, and then drive-through cleaning. So these were things that were borrowed from, and I can't remember if it was the banks that started it or the fast food. One of the two started it and then borrowed it from the other, and then it spread to other industries. Now, what I want you to understand is the thinking that I use behind developing USPs, because that's part of what I do is look for the unique selling proposition in any business, any industry, including the floor covering industry. And what you're going to learn in the second portion of today's call is my 14-step process for unearthing unique selling propositions. And unique selling propositions can be used for your overall business. That's how most people in the club probably think of it at this point, but also for special offers and sales processes. And as we get further into today's call, that'll make more sense. First of all, part one of the module is, what the heck is a USP and why should you care? And I want to take some time and educate and answer that question. Now, some of what we discuss today will be familiar to you, especially if you've been in the club for any length of time. It'll be a good review, and we're also going to hit it from other angles, new angles in ways perhaps you haven't thought of before. So let's dive right into what the heck is a USP and why should you care. First of all, let's talk about commoditization. We live in a society where multiple products and services have been commoditized, meaning the average consumer has been taught to see them as all being exactly the same, with the only differentiation being price. Okay, it's happened with mortgages, insurance, carpet cleaning, the flooring industry, just about anything you buy at Walmart, okay, item after category after category has been commoditized, where the only difference is price, and there's tremendous pressure in all forms of advertising media, downward pressure on price. People, businesses, corporations promoting low price, and at the same time educating the average consumer that low price is the way that you make buying decisions. In fact, it's so bad that anybody that promotes on something other than price is actually becoming an exception rather than the rule, at least what you hear in mainstream advertising. And like I said, mainstream big corporations have spent billions of dollars brainwashing the general public. Walmart, Home Depot, and other box stores have done a huge disservice. The problem with low price is manyfold, and we've talked about it, but the biggest one is all it takes, if your unique competitive advantage is low price, then all it takes is for someone else to come along with a lower price, and you've instantly lost your unique competitive advantage. And it doesn't matter how big you are, you can still lose that advantage. If you think back to, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, who would have imagined that Kmart, they were the colossus at the time, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, going back to the 70s and early 80s. Who, if you'd have said back then, yeah, Kmart is really going to be in trouble, it would have been almost unimaginable. Well, today they're in trouble, and they're trying to reinvent themselves. And, of course, the big colossus now is Walmart. And there are strong indications of chinks in Walmart's armor because their competitive market advantage is low price. And what is happening is other categories are coming along, subcategories, and nipping at their heels, electronics, paints, hardware, all the subdivisions within Walmart. There's other big box stores that are coming along saying they're the low price leader in that area. So it's a cutthroat game, it's a suicide mission, and it can't be sustained forever because somehow, someday, somebody's going to come along with a lower price. Also, low price is the last refuge of the mediocre marketing mind. And by the way, I'm working right out of the USP creator manual that sent out to everybody before the call, and I'm on page one right now. The easiest thing in the world is to promote a low price. It takes no creative energy. It takes no effort. It's lazy. It reveals a real lack of knowledge about marketing and creating sales processes that really create differentiation. And the USP is the antidote, a huge antidote to that low price pressure. Moving on to page two of the manual, let's talk about apples and oranges. Imagine that you go in and you see, you're at a fruit stand and you see a box of apples for 50 cents a piece, and then right next to it is a box of apples for $1 a piece, and they look the same. Well, if you're not given any differentiation whatsoever, no education, nothing, just a price, well, you'd be an idiot to pay the dollar when you could pay 50 cents, okay? Now, there is a psychological thing that happens where some people will buy the more expensive one because they associate a higher price with quality. That does happen, and that's something that should be taken into consideration, especially when going for upper, high-end type of markets. There are some people who just will not buy the lower price. But setting that aside for a minute, there is no difference except for the price. So if the owner of the fruit stand was to say, yes, but this apple for a dollar, this is an organic apple, and the other's not. And with this organically grown apple, here, smell it. You can smell how much more fragrant the organic apple is. It also has three times the flavor and twice as many vitamins as the other apple. And also it was grown without pesticides and harsh chemicals of any kind. It's grown totally naturally. So now, even though you're shopping for apples, it's no longer an apples-to-apples comparison. Now it's an apples and oranges comparison. Now there's a solid, compelling reason to choose the dollar apple over the 50-cent apple. Okay? You never, ever, ever want to let your prospects compare apples to apples. You always want them comparing apples to oranges. Okay? And that's going to become more clear as we work our way through this. USPs are not universal selling propositions. And universal selling propositions are things like, you know, free estimates, free consultation, that sort of thing. A unique selling proposition is something that's unique to your business and something that totally sets you apart from all the others in your business category. And two good examples that I've mentioned over and over again are Federal Express, their USP, when it absolutely positively has to be there overnight, and Domino's Pizza, fresh hot pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less guaranteed. Both of these companies built empires on the strength of these USPs. And a good USP isn't general. It's very, very specific. It focuses like a laser beam on a very specific benefit. You know exactly the benefit you're getting with Federal Express. What you don't hear from them, from Federal Express, is number one in customer satisfaction or in business for 80 years or something like that. You know what the benefit is. That's what a unique selling proposition does. Another important job that the unique selling proposition does, and this is moving on to page three, is it answers the unspoken question on every prospect's mind, which is, why should I do business with you versus each and every competitive option available to me, including doing nothing? In fact, that question is so important that I would memorize that question. I'd have my sales team memorize that question. I would post it in the break room, and I'd post it next to your desk, because ultimately that is the question that you've got to answer with every person that walks through your door, okay? And there's many different ways to answer that question, and one of them is the unique selling proposition. And most businesses do a really crappy job of answering that question. Some of the typical examples you'll see are number one in customer satisfaction, we care, honest, reliable, excellence in customer service. Other ones are lowest prices guaranteed, drive a little to save a lot, our prices won't be beat, low price leader, that kind of thing, okay? And they're really not unique selling propositions at all. They aren't unique selling propositions at all because they aren't unique and they don't sell anything, okay? So let's get into talking about specific areas where a USP can be applied to. First of all is testimonials, using testimonials as USPs. Now, they differ from a traditional USP in that the message is implied. Testimonials say to your prospect, you can get amazing results like this too, or I can solve your biggest challenge too, or hiring me is a very smart move, okay? Testimonials say all of that it implies all of that without you coming out and saying it. And as a rule of thumb, I recommend putting testimonials in all your marketing wherever possible. It's an instant credibility builder. It separates you from the competition. It answers that question, why should I do business with you versus each and every competitive option available to me, including doing nothing. Okay. Dan, You're using testimonials in your marketing now, is that correct?
Not as much as we need to.
Okay. When somebody comes in, a good example of a testimonial is when somebody comes in off of a referral because they've been referred to your store. And I don't want to get into a huge referral discussion right now, but a lot of your business is referrals.
Yes, it is.
Talk about the difference between when a referral comes in versus somebody off of just a general ad or website.
Well, the typical Yellow Page customer is they're working on 3, 4, 5 different stores, and every salesman's a lion SOB, and they have no friend in the industry at that point. On a referral basis, you work on borrowed trust, and believe you me, you need to make sure that you honor that borrowed trust. But when you have that borrowed trust, then you're their friend in the industry by proxy through whoever recommended you. And so you have borrowed trust, you have you don't have to build that, and that is the greatest benefit of a referral.
All right. So a testimonial works in the same way as a referral. You are getting that borrowed trust, third-party recommendation, okay? Let's move on to guarantee as a unique selling proposition. That's on page 4. The great thing about a powerful guarantee is it creates a situation where you do risk reversal. People don't want to risk their money. None of us do. And if you can reverse that risk, take risk out of the equation, you're going to create a unique competitive advantage that your competitors don't have. And the one that I want to look at today is the 100% ironclad triple guarantee. Now, one mistake that I see is people offering guarantees, especially like the zero regrets guarantee. They offer it, they have it included, but they don't market it. And that's not a smart move because now you have the liability of a guarantee, but none of the marketing advantages. One of our members, Gary Combs, actually put the guarantee on all of his trucks. He's got the zero regrets guarantee. You'll love your new floors or we'll replace them free on all of his trucks. And I recommend you do the same. The three parts to the 100% ironclad triple guarantee are guarantee number one, the zero regrets guarantee, guarantee number two, the lifetime installation warranty, and guarantee number three, the installer professionalism guarantee. Now, Dan is a Flooring America dealer, and many co-ops have a version of the zero regrets guarantee, something like it. The problem is few of them promote it correctly. If anything, it's almost a footnote at the bottom of the page. And that is a huge risk reversal. People are scared to death, you know, spending thousands of dollars, and then, hey, it turns out they hate the flooring. This takes that away, total risk reversal. Dan, why don't you talk for a minute about the results and the customer response you've gotten from using this powerful guarantee?
Well, typically, it is a big thing to step out there and say, we warrant, and state what you actually do warrant, but if you're not happy, we'll change the floor. Now, of course, with all warranties, you have verbiage inside them that defines that warranty, but the main thing is, you know, most dealers, whether they have this through a co-op or offering it individually with their vendors, whoever, they're scared that, oh man, if I have to change a floor, it's going to cost me, I'm going to lose my shirt, the weeks in the toilet, you know, everything like that. And the reality isn't such, because you may lose some of the profit off the sale initially, but with a lot of these warranties, believe it or not, your vendors will stand behind you, even if even for an open line dealer, in participation. Now, of course, you have to offer it correctly. Typically, what we see is that when you tell a person that, that if you just really made an error and you just hate it, we'll change it. And they go, no. You say, yeah. And the surprising thing is most people don't make these decisions lightly. But what I would say is always tell them, the worst thing you can hear is, I wish I would have. You know,
yep.
I wish I would have put a different color in, or I wish I would have put a different carpet style in. And if they really just made an error that they can't live with, you're there, hold their hand, and you'll take them onto the promised land.
You know, so, nationwide, statistically, only about 1% gets replaced. And
I would say it's less than that for our
probably store. Is less than that.
I would say it's like 1/100th of a percent. It's that small.
Yeah.
But when you do it, or you try to do it, you can't believe the results. And most of the time that I've done it, I've probably been offering this for 15 years. We've replaced, I don't know, a half a dozen floors, maybe 10.
Yep.
And most of the time people don't believe it, or when they get to changing it, they will say, well, I've grown to like it. I don't want to change now. And we actually have one right now that's in play. The flooring was sold 6 years ago. And this sounds stupid, so if I sound stupid, I apologize. But they came back and said, we hate the hardwood. And I said, really? And they said, yep. I said, tell you what, I'll give you half the money you spent on the wood. I'll pull it out for free, and you purchase at regular today's prices anything in the store to replace it. Now, the dope that I am, it's going to cost me $3,000. The upside is they're giving us another $8,000 of business. So, you know, I am not going to make a bunch of money on it, but I'm not going to lose a nickel. And that's after 6 years. And so the idea is, I'm hoping that, one, we'll get a hellacious testimonial from them. I don't want them to say how long it, you know, the deal went on, because I don't want people coming back 10 and 15 years later. But whenever anyone comes back to me and says, you know, I'm really disappointed with how something performed, but they still come back, I will make some type of an adjustment to them. Never does it include labor. So bear that in mind, is you may not initially make any money, but long term, you'll certainly make it.
And you'll make it back at testimonials, referrals, goodwill, the reputation, all of that.
Right, right. And even if it's beyond the 30 days, don't be such a stickler that, you know, you've gone someplace, well, does, you know, that's our policy, TS, or tough.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So always be flexible. Remember, the customer makes your paycheck, not the other way around.
You did a good job. You know, you didn't give it away, but you sure gave them a concession that they're sure as heck not going to get from Home Depot. So,
absolutely not. We didn't. You know, basically what I'm doing is I'm giving back the, not all, or, well, it's a little bit more than my profit, but long term, we'll come out of the job, we'll actually make $1,000, and then I'll cover them all my expenses and everything. And
yeah.
So, long term, it's going to be very, very valuable.
I think so too. A couple other guarantee examples. I was in the mortgage industry for a while, and one that we came up with was, you get the best home loan service ever, or it's free. If at the end of the loan process you aren't thrilled with our service, we'll waive our fees. And over 6 years of doing that, I think I refunded a total of maybe $2,000 in fees. But I was able to say that, and I trademarked it. I own the phrase, you get the best home loan service ever or it's free. I don't know of any mortgage anywhere in the country that has that kind of a unique selling proposition. REI, Dan, you ever go to REI? You have that in Montana?
We live in the sticks. No, we don't.
Okay, all right. Well, that's
But LL Bean has a similar deal. If you know, if you don't like your shoes after you wore them for 2 years, they'll give you a new pair.
Exactly. REI's is, we stand behind everything we sell. If at any time, this is right off their website, if at any time your REI purchase doesn't meet your expectations, you can return it for a replacement or refund. What's more, if you're an REI member, you don't even need a receipt. We'll have a record of your purchase. I do backpacking and hiking and camping and all that stuff, and that's what they specialize in. And I pay more. I bought thousands of dollars worth of stuff from REI, and I've taken stuff back a year later, stuff that I just wound up not using, thinking it would be something I'd use. There was not even anything wrong with it. I just took it back, and, you know, they honored it. And, no, I didn't have a receipt a year or two later. They just looked me up in their records because I'm a member, and I didn't even need a receipt. Other guarantees, the stress-free triple guarantee, and I'm on page 8 of the manual now, and I want to go really quickly here because I want to get to the 14-step process. I've done some work with flooring distributors, and there are some bugaboos that drive retailers nuts. And working with retailers and working with distributors, I developed some guarantees. There's things you can learn from this. So the stress-free triple guarantee, part one is on-time delivery guarantee. And the verbiage goes, we realize that you're counting on prompt delivery in order to provide good service to your clients, so we walk over hot coals to guarantee that you get your delivery on the day we promised. If we see that events beyond our control are going to make us miss our delivery day, we will phone you on or before the day it's due and give you a heads up so you can notify your client. If we fail to communicate a delay in delivery, we will send you a $50 gift certificate that you can apply towards your next invoice. The price accuracy guarantee. I'm not going to read the verbiage on that. You can read that yourself. And then the prompt return call guarantee. And the verbiage on that is, nothing is more frustrating than leaving a message with your sales rep and not knowing when or if you're going to get a call, if they're going to call you back. When you leave a message with your sales rep, they will return your call within 2 hours guaranteed. If you call after 4 p.m., your call will be returned by 9 a.m. the next business day, guaranteed. If they're late for any reason, your sales rep will give you a gift card for a large coffee at Starbucks. Okay? And then I created a voicemail script for them to put on their cell phones. Hi, thank you for calling John Smith with XYZ Distributors, home of the prompt return call guarantee, where I promise to return your call within 2 hours, guaranteed. If you call after 4 p.m., I'll return your call by 9 a.m. the next business day, guaranteed. If I'm late calling you back, I'll give you a gift card for a large Starbucks coffee. So please leave your name and a number where you can be directly reached, and I'll call you back within 2 hours, guaranteed. And there's two things that I want you to notice about these guarantees. First, I clearly define what the guarantee is. I promise to return your call within 2 hours. Now, that's very different than where we pride ourselves on customer satisfaction or been in business for 50 years or something like that. It's very, very specific. And second is, I back up the guarantee with some sort of a benefit. In this case, if they're late calling back, you get a large Starbucks gift card. Okay. Lots of companies use the word guarantee. It's thrown around. It's a cliche. That's why I always name the guarantee and be very, very, very specific about what it offers, what's being guaranteed, and what will happen as a recourse if the guarantee needs to be followed through on. You want to keep your ears out for hidden nuggets, okay? I'm on page 9 and 10 of the manual now. You know, looking for things that are problematic in your industry. In the flooring industry, installers are notoriously unprofessional. Big box stores especially use underpaid, untrained, uncertified installers. And that's how the installer professionalism guarantee was created, was because of the this problem in the industry. And you can read more. There's another big example of some work guarantees, USPs I've created for flooring distributors. Page 11, turning industry norms into USPs. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but there's a real detailed breakdown from the carpet cleaning industry where I use service packages. And in the manual, you'll see that I've highlighted all the things that I list, but they're just normal, standard, and customary items. The general public doesn't know that they're standard and customary items because they don't know anything about carpet cleaning. But by listing them, it builds value into your service and answers that question, why should I do business with you versus each and every competitive option available to me, including doing nothing. And I give a whole lot of examples of using industry norms, including from mortgages, floor, carpet cleaning, and so forth. Page 14, USPs from thin air, okay? These are USPs that require little or no extra work or expense, but they create value from thin air. You look for these kinds of opportunities. In carpet cleaning, I used a 22-point quality checklist, 100% bulletproof guarantee, and a one-year stay clean warranty. All of those things cost me basically nothing, but it enabled us to charge premium prices. And there's examples from the mortgage business and then the flooring business. All of those, when I say thin air, developing from thin air, I don't mean unvaluable. They are valuable to the consumer. They just don't cost you anything to provide them or cost you very little, or they don't take a lot of extra work or a total revamping of your company policies. Page 14 and 15, I talk about renaming common industry terms. In the mortgage business, instead of consultations, we did strategy sessions. Carpet cleaning, instead of estimates, we did free carpet audits. Carpet audit was developed by Joe Polish for the carpet cleaning industry. And floor covering, of course, we do design audits. We don't do estimates. Martial arts schools, instead of initial consultations, I taught my clients to do sports reviews. I did a little bit of work in the martial arts world years back. So keep an ear out for common terms that you can rename. Starbucks is, you know, tall, grande, and venti. Okay, you know, it says small, medium, and large. Cost them nothing to do that, but it creates the differentiation. Last thing I'll mention before we move on to the step-by-step prospect is climbing into your prospect's brain. The best salespeople and marketers enter a conversation that's already taking place in the minds of their prospects. The one conversation that you can count on that's already going on is the question, why should I do business with you versus each and every competitive option available to me, including doing nothing? Others are points of pain, hopes, fears, depending on their demographics. You know, what's going on in your target customer's mind and getting into that conversation. All right, let's move on to the developing your USP, and that starts on page 16 of the manual. This is the exact 14-step process that I use in developing unique selling propositions. I've done it for multiple industries, and even for individual campaigns and sales processes, okay? In this section, I've got some tips that are going to help you. First of all is schedule brainstorming time. Block out an hour when you're developing unique selling propositions. And I found that one-hour chunks are more effective, you know, than sitting around for 6 hours trying to think of something. Do it in a quiet place where you won't be disturbed and turn off all your mobile devices. Use a notepad or a computer to take notes, and sometimes I'll write down 25 to 50 USPs for a specific project, and I'll fine-tune the wording until it conveys the message that I'm shooting for. I will. A good example is the zero regrets guarantee. You'll love your new floors, or I'll replace them free. I probably wrote 50 versions of that tweaking it and fine-tuning it before I came up with the verbiage that I wanted. Some of the steps may seem redundant, and you'll come up with similar answers, but that's okay, because what you're doing is you're attacking the creative process from different angles, okay? So let's talk about step one, identify your target market. Now, if you're doing joint ventures, this can be specific for a specific niche, contractors, interior designers, realtors. For clients, this can be homeowners with a combined household income of $200,000 or more, homeowners in certain neighborhoods, people who drive certain kinds of cars, the demographics that I mentioned on page 15, okay? You want to clearly define your target market, because that's going to help you climb into their brain and enter the conversation that's already going there. Dan, talk about your target market. Who is your ideal client?
Well, what I would classify as that is, and this has changed a little bit over the last couple of years. We used to say 35 to 50, and you know, we've probably seen that climb to 45 to 60, female, double income. In our market, we tend to be not as high-end as some areas in the country, but ideally a combined family income of $80,000 would be target. And most of them have children that are in high school or college. So,
okay.
You know, previously it was the soccer mom, but we found the soccer mom is not quite as affluent as she once was.
All right. So those are your target market may be for your, of course, should be for your overall business, but it may pertain to a specific campaign as well. For instance, if you're targeting doctors, you're going to send out a special campaign to doctors, you know, doing vertical marketing into specific niches. Okay. Step two is identifying your prospect's fears. What are their greatest fears? What keeps them laying awake at night? And some examples, a plumber, he's going to leave a mess in my house. A used car dealer, they're going to lie to me and sell me a lemon. Floor dealer, what if I spend too much money or a bunch of money on new floors but wind up hating the color? Okay, it's some of the prospect's fears. Third thing is identifying performance gaps in your industry. What totally sucks about the service in your industry at large? Where are some of the obvious weak points? Floor covering, one of them is unprofessional installers, remodeling contractors, people who don't show up, don't return phone calls, unexpected cost overruns, auto repair, dirty waiting rooms. Steve D'Angelo, are you still on the line with us?
I'm here.
All right. Hey, talk about some, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Talk about some of the performance gaps in the flooring industry, perhaps something we haven't talked about or an angle that we haven't addressed, something that's come up with your clients.
Sure. Well, I can, you know, I think if, let's just take two important parts of the market. You got general contractors and builders. I think their biggest fear is that you're going to cause their project to be off schedule. So they tend to, put all the pieces together in a project, and they need someone to show up on time to begin their portion of the activity and, complete it on time per the schedule. I think that's a real big one. Along the same lines for those same clients, that same target market would be the whole quality orientation. I find that with the custom home builders, they're particularly sensitive to the final output. They sell a particular quality level in a home that they're going to build for somebody. And they get some substandard work that can be a real stress point for them.
Okay. So, go ahead. Well, I was just going to let me interject real quick. So, Steve's identified his target market. He's talking about contractors. Step two, prospects' fears. They don't want their schedule knocked off or held up. And three, the performance gap is people in the flooring industry who cause delays. So Steve's really identified a vertical niche within the industry where you're targeting a specific type of client who has a specific set of needs. It's very different than the typical homeowner. So go ahead, Steve. You were going to continue?
Paul is going to jump into the retail side. By the way, I just happened to write down while we're kind of talking back and forth with Dan there on the contractors and builders, just kind of playing around with something, you know, maybe some sort of a guarantee to start on time and complete, you know, per the schedule, or, you know, we'll rebate you back $100 a day that we're late. You know, sounds risky, but I had to play with that a little bit on some of these jobs. But, you know, if they ask me, I have one contractor that's real detail-oriented about how long will it take you to complete this component. I don't know, let's just say it's a tile floor, 1,200 feet of tile floor, and they say, how long will it take you to complete this component? Well, we take into account all the aspects of it. We tell them, you know, 7 working days, 9 working days, whatever we tell them.
Sure.
And so they put that into their schedule to make a whole Microsoft project, you know, schedule based on that, me starting on a particular day, us finishing on a particular day, and then everything else is lined up like dominoes after it. And, you know, what if, you know, so, you know, maybe I protect myself, and I tell them 10 instead of 9 days, but really I think I'm going to do it in 8 or 9 days, but I tell them 10 just to protect myself, and I give them some sort of benefit. And then I put something in place for my technician. Here's an extra $50 on the job if you finish it, you know, in, you know, before 9 days. That cost me nothing, $50. And I get, you know, a real, you know, strong USP with a builder. I'd be shocked if any other of my competitors would walk around to all these custom home builders and say something like that to them.
So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think I could probably have, you know, kind of, you know, be the only company that's, you know, got the guts to, you know, make such a commitment. And I figure, you know, why not? Really, what I got to lose? I get to define the time period.
Absolutely, you could. And, you know, something like your project on time or we pay you, something like that. I mean, that's one of those situations where you'd sit down and you'd write it out 25 or 50 times on a notepad until you tweak the language to where in that one phrase they get it.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know, you're hitting their biggest. I love it, Steve. That's a really good idea.
I think I'm going to put something like this forward. I got some new salespeople chasing after new contractors, and they need, you know, something in their bag to catch their attention. So I think I'll play with that a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. And that's exactly Steve's already doing the process. So I love that. Let's, for sake of time, let's burn through these. Step 4 is identify commonplace fraud that occurs in your industry. Floor dealers, bait and switch, poor workmanship, not honoring warranties, contractors, basically the same thing. And I give different examples there. Step 5 is what annoys prospects shopping for services in your industry. And I give a bunch of examples. Floor dealers, scary-looking installers, no communication throughout the buying and installation process, missed deadlines, which Steve talked about. Contractors, same thing. Mechanics, talk down to women, dirty waiting room, leave greasy handprints on the steering wheel. Mobile phone company, lousy coverage, being on hold when calling in for customer service. I give a whole bunch of examples. So what drives people nuts in your business? And make a list. And that could become part of a USP. Steve, anything that we've covered, is there a big thing that drives either contractors or residential remodel clients nuts about the flooring industry that we haven't already covered?
Well, it seems to me that the most sensitive issue with the retail side of the business all revolves around finished quality, things that don't look right, things that don't fit right, things that come loose, that kind of thing, or maybe damage that's been done to their home in some way. It's the stuff that they can visually see, and they just look at it every day, day in, day out. Every time they walk past that room, they just wrote a big, giant check, and it just drives them completely bonkers.
Okay. All right, so that would be, write that out three different ways, you know, the finished product, some visual aspect of this expensive investment they've made is driving them nuts every day, okay? That can become a USP. Jimmy Williams, I don't know if he's on the line with us right now, but he is right now in the middle of testing a one-year follow-up visit that would help address this. We're going to hear from I'm going to actually be following up with him in March to see how that's going, and if it's working out well for him, we'll bring him on another call. But he talked about that last fall. Okay, so that's a good example. Somebody that, and it may be different. We've hit some of the big ones, you know, spending too much on flooring, or not too much on flooring, but spending in a certain amount on flooring and then hating it. Installer professionalism, installation warranties. Okay, but there may be things that you know, smaller issues or things that are unique to your area or big things that just haven't even been addressed anywhere in the materials. Well, that's your chance to identify it and address it. Okay, six, identify ways your business stands out from competitors or could stand out. And I say that because there may be an easy little tweak you could do that you, right now your business doesn't stand out, but you could tweak it a little bit. And Steve's example was perfect. Right now his business doesn't stand out in as far as the on-time project completion, but it could stand out for very little risk and very little change in procedure. Okay, so again, as you go through this checklist, you're going to hit the problem or the challenge from different angles, and this is just yet another angle. You know, pre-existing features and benefits in your business that are unique, you know, unique products or services, unique way the product is delivered, iPhone, the Crocs shoes, 1-800-Flowers, the way the flowers are delivered, the guarantees, guaranteed overnight delivery by FedEx, and the zero regrets guarantee, and so forth. Okay, and then identify opportunities for unique and powerful guarantees. That's on page 21. It's step 7. And we won't spend a lot of time on that. Steve, again, this is yet another angle where the contractor on-time project completion guarantee would come in. Step 8 is identify problems that your product or service solves. Some examples are marketing consulting, low revenue, lack of customers, lack of web traffic. For floor covering, it could be worry about choosing the wrong floor, scary-looking installers, auto mechanics, safety from unethical mechanics, no threat of being treated rudely, okay? So there's problems that your product or service can solve, and list those, even if they seem obvious, even if they seem, you know, old hat to you, they aren't to your clients and prospects. Turning industry norms into USPs, we talked about that. So make a list of all the things that are normal and customary, and how could you package those into a list of benefits, package pricing, that creates differentiation and answers that question, why should I do business with you versus each and every competitive option available to me? Step 10 is spin USPs from thin air. And again, they cost little to nothing to implement, but they don't require huge overhauls of your company policy. What Steve just came up with, the project completion guarantee is a perfect example of that. It's not going to really cost him anything, but it's going to be of tremendous value to his clients. Identify common industry terms that could be renamed. Okay, Starbucks renaming small, medium, and large into tall, grande, and venti. Doing design audits instead of estimates. Okay.
Hey, Jim, can
yes.
I just offer one up for the group on this?
Absolutely.
Something I've changed, I don't know, first month I got into this business was I stopped calling my technicians installers, I call everybody else's technicians installers. My
yes.
technicians are technicians. They're professional guys with a lot of experience, and they deserve to have a title that's respectful. Well, that's what we call them here, technicians, and we capitalize that letter, and we use it frequently.
Excellent, and I love the little wicked little twist of calling everybody else's installers. little subliminal salesmanship there. I love it. Okay, identifying the nuggets. Going back through, and what you want to do there is you want to go back through the steps and write down all the benefits that could be worked into a unique selling proposition. These can be guarantees, problems that are solved, performance gaps. Just make a list of all the nuggets, okay? And then step 13 is start condensing, and that's where you're going to start writing out the phrases and taking these benefits and condensing it down into something that can ultimately become your unique selling proposition. And then step 14 is implementing the USP into all your marketing, and I give a list of partial list of places you can implement that. You know, this has, as we've gone through this, we're up against the end of the hour here. I think that what might be helpful, and I'll just get everybody's opinion on this. Dan and Steve, do you think it may be helpful to take a roundtable call and do nothing but dedicate it to certain points within the step 1 through 14 and do some brainstorming that way? Do you think that would be helpful?
Absolutely.
Well, I do, Jim. I mean, really, we're always on an island. I say that all the time, that you know, I'm on an island here, and if it weren't for people like yourselves for me to talk to, you know, who the heck am I going to, learn new things from? So I think it's always good to do that.
Okay. I'm taking it off lecture mode now. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Has this been helpful, helping you kind of think differently, different angles about your business?
Absolutely, Jim.
Okay.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah, good ideas.
The next roundtable is at the end of the month. What if we were to take that roundtable, and like I just said to Steve and Dan, same question to you guys. We took the roundtable and just dedicated it to going through these step 1 through 14 and just brainstorming. Would you guys find that useful?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Absolutely.
Let's do that. And if
Jim, I would kind of like to offer maybe we all do just a little bit of homework previous to that, too, so we don't come in necessarily so green that we have no ideas either. We can do some of this on our own and then come forth with our ideas for fleshing them out or critiquing, and not in a bad way. I'm not talking criticize, but that we have some things concrete before we come to the call.
I think if everybody was to take this, the 14 steps and take one thing about their business and try and go through and try and work out a USP or well, just what Dan said. I think that would be real helpful. And then what we can do is as a group, you know, you may come up with a USP and you're just going, man, I know what I'm trying to get across. I'm just having trouble coming up with this short, pithy little phrase that's going to encapsulate it, and we can all brainstorm together. Let's do that. Hey, we got about 2 minutes left. Any questions at this point before we wrap it up? Going once? Going twice. Okay, then you've all got your homework. Do a little work on your own with the checklist. Go through the steps and bring it to the roundtable next month. Not next month, at the end of this month, and we'll go through it and come up with some more nuggets like Steve and Dan have shared. And we've had some new, a number of new Platinum members join and people upgrade. If you're new to the Platinum Roundtable, I can't tell you how many good things come out of this group, because we just unmute the call and everybody just starts tossing out ideas and different points of view. And it's really helpful. So hope we'll see you all on the call at the end of the month. Dan and Steve, thank you so much for your input. Valuable as always.
You're welcome. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. And we'll catch you on the next call. Until next time, happy marketing.